Welcome to the Go Health Podcast. I am Gillian Strain, Chief Exec of Go Health, an organization with a vision to enable churches and individual Christians to be a healing presence in the world right now. And I have to say, looking at our headlines, our news reports, if there was ever a time when we need a bit of healing in our world, it's right now. So this is the third podcast in our series, Exploring Burnout. And today, my guest, I'm very excited, is Bruce Stanley, who is a designer, a facilitator, a coach, and a writer, and the founder of something he calls Day Crafting, the daily practice of the skilled use of time. So Bruce, hello, welcome to the Go Health Podcast.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's really lovely to have you. And I'm going to start with what is day crafting. But first, I want to ask you something about your bio, because your bio, which is on the podcast here, it says in your 20s, you ran away from the circus. Tell us the story about that. How did this come about?
Yes, it is a reverse of the running to the circus. I came out of 5 years of training to be a graphic designer when I was at college and university, straight into being a circus performer. So I think I was possibly inspired by the kind of Bauhaus idea that creativity can cross boundaries. Anyway, perhaps I was always more of a show person in those days than anything else. So yes, I went to Bristol. I spent a year at circus school and formed a double act. And in my mid-20s, moved on to other things, even more creative.
So it sounds like you've been crossing lots of boundaries through your career, and now you've landed on day crafting. So can you tell us, first of all, summarize what day crafting is, and then tell us a bit about where this vision came from?
Yeah, day crafting is about bringing our intentional focus to the day. So I guess it would fit possibly under the heading of personal development, or it could fit into spiritual disciplines, or it could even fit into business and time management, that kind of thing. But instead of looking at long-term metrics and future goals, it places its emphasis very much on the day you're in. One of the inspirations was that I think maybe over 20 years ago, I qualified as a coach, a long time before coaching was as popular as it is now. And I noticed of a fairly kind of critical eye over models, and noticed that there was something in common with a lot of the people that I was working with, which is that they could quite easily imagine amazing future states, you know, in 3 months' time, in 5 years' time, future plans, that kind of thing. But almost all of them couldn't use a free hour in the very day that they were in to bring about the kind of qualities that they were hoping that future life would bring. In other words, if I manage to bring about all of these changes to my life situation or a relationship or a job or money or, you know, whatever it was, then my life would be how I would want it. I would be living the good life. And once we broke down what that good life meant, what was the quality of the day that you would be having in 5 years' time? And if it just happened that somebody had a free hour that afternoon, and I said, well, how could you bring those qualities from this imagined 5 years into the future, into the day that you're having? That's actually quite tricky for a lot of people. There's a quote, millions long for immortality that don't know what to do with a wet Sunday afternoon.
So is it a bit like bringing the future dream and the time we have each day and bringing them closer together in a practical way?
I think when it's recognizing that the good life isn't a future destination, it's a practice. It is today. The time to be happy is right now. You know, very, very practically. So much of, let's say, part of our psychology, part of our attention, if it's left to its own devices, something called the default mode network, starts to get captured by thoughts about the future. They could be worries, concerns, or the same thoughts about the past. In other words, we leave the present quite easily. And I don't want to give the impression that this is about mindfulness, because it's not. It's not about this precise moment that I'm feeling the breath rise and fall in my body. It's not that kind of thing. It is about the unit of the day that we're in. And being able to, maybe a more romantic way is those days that you go to bed feeling completely contented. This day couldn't have been improved in any way. And those days happen to all of us. And it's not that we did any of the things that we might fantasize about when we're younger, winning the lottery, meeting the perfect person, da da da. It's just actually components of elements that are within our conscious control. Were we able to bring our conscious control to those factors? Our energy use, our use of time, structuring the productive part of the day to include things like measurable, meaningful progress. They're all psychological elements that have a huge effect on our well-being, flourishing, all the rest of it, and also to work against things like burnout and growing stress and all the rest of it. They are all in the practice of the day.
Give us an example, like, of what it actually looks like. What would you be recommending somebody? So I want to go to bed tonight, Bruce, thinking, God, I had a great day, apart from talking to you, which is obviously going to be the highlight. But, you know, I've got an hour after lunch between meetings. You know, give me some practical advice just so I can get my head into this a bit better.
Okay, it could be about things that you do and also things that you don't do. I teach day crafting a number of ways, but with the apprentice course, which is a 6-week course, we start with the idea of energy, and that kind of runs all the way through the course. So the first thing about energy is to recognize that you have limited energy today, that you're likely to have put more things into the day than you're able to actually bring your full energy to.
Yep, sounds familiar.
Another part of that is to recognize that at different times of your day, you have energy peaks and troughs that suit different things. So maybe the answer to your question, the smart answer to your question, is that yesterday we could have planned today in order to work with all of this stuff if you knew it. If you didn't, one of the easiest things would be to try and find a few things to say no to, and for what remains to be able to bring your full attention to it.
Hmm. It sounds like quite complicated, to be honest, that is some of this stuff. So could you give us a little bit of a 2-minute summary of some of the neuroscience behind this? Because that's quite intriguing, isn't it?
So I think below the hood of day crafting, there's a lot of neuroscience that emphasizes the present moment and the day that we're in. So if we start talking about the future, our brains are very much split into two parts in lots of ways. We have a left and right, we have a head brain and a gut brain, those kind of things. But the split that I'm particularly interested in is the if you want the real science, it's the orbital frontal cortex. It's a very new part of our brain. And it's the part of the brain that you and I are using to talk about this kind of thing. It's the part of the brain that thinks in morals, that looks to the future, decides what and what isn't a good idea. It's the part of our brain that we think rules, makes all of our decisions for us. However, it isn't very good at this. It's very new. It's only 200,000 years old, and it thinks it's very good at this, but actually it makes a lot of problems when it comes to predicting our future, predicting what will and won't make us happy. It makes prediction errors about how much time we'll have or how much energy we'll have. So all of us are arriving at days that this part of the brain planned in the past, only to find that we're far too busy. Why did I ever think that I could fit all this in? So the big part of the missing picture is the part of our brain which is the ancient, automatic, multitasking animal part of our brain. So whether you know this as thinking fast and slow or system one or one and two, the metaphor I use for this brain split is the elephant and the rider. So the elephant is the present part that dominates our decision-making in the present moment. The elephant's job is to keep us alive. It isn't remotely interested in what may or may not make us happy. It's interested in us fitting into our tribe. It's interested in protecting territory. It's interested in affiliating with others. So there is a clash between these two different parts of our brain. And day crafting is trying to bring the spotlight very quickly onto that, onto those elements. Both need each other. One of the things that the elephant can do is carry on without ever running out of energy, whereas a rider-dominated part of our day, when we're doing, for instance, logical thinking, analytical thinking, you've got maybe 2 or 3 hours worth of that energy in your tank. So it's a matter of bringing the two together.
And that's why you say it's about using the time well. And earlier you were talking about crafting as well. And it's a word I most often associated with kiddies, you know, do craft corner, or because kids naturally are artists and craft makers. We lose it along the way, I guess. And I guess very few kids go to bed wondering if they use their time well that day. So it's sort of an adult thing that comes later, isn't it? So in a sense, it feels like you're saying we're going back to a more natural way of living, where we're able to craft our time and be confident in what we're doing. Bruce, I wonder if you could give us an example, like bring this alive for me. Can you tell me a story about someone you've worked with? I don't know, a doctor. I know you work with lots of different people, doctors, teachers, clergy, whoever it is, somebody who's benefited from day crafting. What was the problem that you helped them solve and what did it look like?
Yes, if I broke down the cohort of people that are apprentices that are using day crafting, meeting regularly, we have a once a month gathering online. The largest cohort would be people in professions where they help other people. So that would be clinicians of one type or another. I work with a number of people in senior management in the NHS, one of whom I guess suffered quite extreme burnout at the end of a long period of period of work, and I think this was very classic burnout. It had all of the core elements that would help you diagnose that, and I think that it isn't PTSD, but there's a certain length of time. Some of the research shows that it can be up to 2 years before people are beginning to be able to pull themselves back together after that kind of burnout. Yeah, there's a lot of us that are in the foothills of this with maybe one or two of the indicators. Anyway, she used day crafting all the way through her recovery at different times.
So when you say use day crafting, what do you actually mean?
The place to start is with maintenance. It goes back to that energy story. So the very first part of her recovery was working out what ensured and what brought energy into her days before she tried to solve anything else. So that's, as you might expect, the basics, primarily sleep, nutrition, exercise, and effective rest. Finding the disciplines to prioritize those over anything else, because there's not a lot you can do if you're not well rested, if you haven't got the energy coming back in. I actually think that people who have completely burnt out are almost an easier cohort to work with than people who are somewhere shy of getting to that worst case. Because we're in that situation, people are still thinking that they can perhaps keep going without actually having to. You haven't felt the full pain of it, so there's less of a motivation to actually stop.
Yeah.
Whereas
and going back to the woman you're talking about, what did it look like in the end? What were the results of your work with her?
Well, if you're working one-to-one, you can actually get quite deep and specialised. So she, although the day crafting materials cover quite a wide range of our day, for her, it was zooming into her identity and her ways of being able to handle stress. So she had about 8 months off work, during which she learnt about her own stress response cycle, learnt about her identity, learnt about the dangers of what it was about her that, and what circumstances she could find herself in the future that would be dangerous, that would mean that she was again moving towards, you know, those kind of risk factors.
And your role in this, Bruce, I mean, are you alongside her, or is it workbooks, or how is she actually doing this day crafting work?
It's all of those things. So, The workbooks are a kind of reference. There's also a very strong community of fellow apprentices that tend to give us a there's something quite countercultural when you really start putting day crafting into practice. For this woman, we actually spent a lot of time working on loops. So
loops
are worries, if you like. If you leave work, let's say it's towards the end of the working day, you've sent an email, maybe a controversial email to somebody, they haven't replied. And if you're wired up this way, you could now be worrying about, yes. So there's an open loop. Well, for people that are in any kind of complex job, those open loops, leaving work with open loops is pretty common. You arrive home, you can't relax, you can't de-stress because deep underneath in the non-conscious, all of these things are keeping you awake. So there are a number of different techniques that we've worked with that suit different people. Germans have a word for this, the Feuerabend ritual, which is a sort of company system culture-wide thing of the leaving work ritual. So for her, she created her own ritual. So rituals crop up quite a bit in day crafting. Instead of turning something into an automatic habit, instead we want to make it into something that's much more conscious. So for her, it involves things that she did in her car, music that she listened to.
That's very interesting. I think, I can get hold of that, a ritual about leaving. So I do that all the time, Bruce. My husband calls it going down the worry hole. And, you know, they're always at night when I, you know, and you're not working, you can't solve it. So that sounds a really practical thing people can do. And because it feels like sometimes it's, what you're describing is edging towards sort of therapy or counseling rather than, you know, practical tools. You're getting underneath some of the problems. Do you recognize that in your work? Is that part of it?
I do have a background in counseling and in spiritual direction and in coaching. And I think for me, coaching was my first push away from a model where what we're doing is fixing what's broken.
Sure.
I moved into positive psychology, which would argue that becoming happier isn't about alleviating the causes of unhappiness. Those are certainly important, but they might take you, let's say, from a measure of -8 to -2. Yep. Whereas positive psychology is trying to argue that alongside that, or even in replace of that, we could create happiness. And there's as much research behind positive tools, things that we can do. So
Can I interrupt you, Bruce? When are the problems too big for day crafting? You know, if people have mental health problems on the one hand, or live within a system that they have no control over. When are the problems too big for day crafting to tackle? And that just has to be recognized.
It would be a similar answer to coaching, which is if you are in trouble with your health and you need specialist physical or mental health, that's outside of the scope of this. And legal issues, financial issues, you know, some serious relationship issues. But actually, I find that people that might be in trouble in some of those ways find that day crafting works alongside. I do have a number of people that I'm working with who also have a therapist or somebody that they're working on money management with, or that they're working on a range of health issues.
Yeah. So if you have something, I'm not thinking about diseases and illness necessarily, but if you live with neurodiversity, ADHD or autism, how does that fit in? Is it sort of learning who you are and how you work best will work with day crafting? Is that part of it?
There are quite a number of people who are finding their way to day crafting who do identify with ADHD or one thing or another. And I'm not an expert in neurodiversity, but there's something about the collective community of people finding each other through this that are adapting the tools to help. So there are again, this is where the craft analogy helps. There are different tools and different ways to use the tools. And there are so many tools that individuals can find one that to achieve a desired outcome. There are lots of different ways to get there.
So where does prayer and spirituality fit into this as part of crafting?
Where does prayer and spirituality fit? I can use myself. I have a routine in the morning, I would say a ritual that's designed to wake me up, put me in a positive frame of mind. And that includes sitting with the morning prayer app, which is wonderful. Before that, I will have spent 20 minutes doing a workout, because these are all different parts of setting an intention for the day ahead, kickstarting my energy. I'm a chronotype that takes a while to get going in the morning, and I'm what positive psychologists call negative affect. So I'm somebody that needs a little bit of help to be bright and sparkly. My wife is bright and sparkly first thing in the morning. I don't tend to be bright and sparkly until maybe an hour or two later, and after I've had a cup of tea.
I'm the same. I'm coffee to get going in the morning. So is this fun? Is this a fun thing to do, Bruce? Because it sounds quite serious. And I'm thinking, so I think about my own life. So I woke up this morning, I've got my kids on half term. So I've got to juggle their time, keep them entertained enough, bring them up, you know, had some positive influence on the day, fit a bit of work around this. Is this a fun thing that can help people who have, you know, as most of us do, complicated lives with things they don't want to do? How does day crafting make any of it fun?
Don't forget that I came out of all of this from being a circus performer. You said earlier on that craft feels like a childish thing or has got connections to childlikeness. And in fact, if you look at traditional crafts, the creativity in those crafts came out of play. So if you turn the clock back, the apprentice would actually be very young, would be somebody handed over to the local master craftsman in a particular craft, and their introduction into it would be through play. And a lot of craftspeople still allow a lot of time in their day for play, which is where innovation comes from. So yes, in fact, one of the core methodologies, there are six, but one of the core methodologies is play. And the reason that I'm trying to introduce and teach people to try and use play in their days, because your energy goes further. If you can make a work activity play, instead of it being neutral or even a drain on your energy, you might find you come out of it with more energy than you had going into it. With that more energy, you're more inspired to be able to leave work with a core metric to day crafting, which is meaningful progress.
Let's go with this. What does play look like in the office, or when you've got, you know, planning 100 church services, or you're juggling a multitude of responsibilities? What does that actually look like, to play in amongst all that?
You have gone straight to the hardest question in day crafting, because I know what this looks like, because I continually pluck games out of the air around me, even if I'm on my own. Instead of walking over to the bin, I might bunch the ball up and throw it. I've just turned that into a game. In meetings, there's a part of me that will find play all the time with, you know, if things go wrong. So I would be the sort of person who would be funny to my kids up until a certain age, and then become that embarrassing dad who's always larking about, you know, and gets told off. So there's a lot of people, I guess, like me, who find games and play just about everywhere, because we know deep down it's a part of creativity. I'm dyslexic. I can always see three different ways to do anything. And one of those is playful. But I think what you've highlighted is the pushback I'm getting from an awful lot of people, which is, I've got a very difficult report to write. How on earth do I make that play?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, we brainstormed. I won't go into it now, but that's a challenging question. But after 20 minutes of interesting discussion about it, we had a long list of very interesting ideas. It's a limit of our imagination.
So, Bruce, you mentioned six methodologies. One is play. What are the other five? Just briefly, can you list them? It's not tests, sorry.
Yeah, the other methodologies, I'm going to make sure that I actually get this right, so bear with me. The methodologies start with the idea of having a filter. So the methodologies different from tools. So tools are things that we take off the shelf and use specifically. So a way to structure your schedule, a way to replace your to-do list with a when to-do list that fits with your chronotype and your energy rhythms, for example. Those are all tools.
Okay.
Whereas methodologies can be used anywhere. So the filter would be the first one, which is a kind of offshoot of your purpose. If you have a filter, you know during the day what is important that day and what you can say yes and no to.
Great.
So another one is to work with your strengths.
Yep.
This is, I use the very scientifically rigorous VIA signature strengths model, which anybody can find a free test online to tell them their signature strengths. The next one is preparation. I think this is perhaps the most important one.
Yep.
Our success at the working surface of the task that's in front of us will be down to the preparation that we've done beforehand. So a lot of people meeting work and procrastinating or finding that they're very easily distracted, the issue isn't so much gritting your teeth and getting on with it. It will probably be because you haven't prepared the task.
Yeah.
The elephant is not emotionally ready to do this, for example. So preparation, very important.
Yep.
Connection, this is huge. This goes back to our Mesolithic hunter-gatherer selves, that we were in connection with each other, in connection with our tribe, with friends, with nature, with the divine. There's a lot of research coming out that our problem isn't what we think it is. It's that we've lost connection in one shape or another. Play, I've mentioned, and the last is moments. So the day is made up of moments that either we've planned in advance or that we're reacting to as they come up.
Okay, great. So I've got another question about this. So imagine the person, I'm going to think of a clergy person. We do a lot of work with clergy, but not exclusively, at Go Health. And they're wanting to craft their day and they've done your course. They understand about the methodologies and the tools and all the rest of it. But they say to you, Bruce, look, I'd love to craft my day because I believe I'm called by God to do this work within the community, but I'm paid by an institution who thinks I should be doing something completely different, who are forcing me to fill out forms or do fundraising. They never say, well done, you're doing well, there's no pay structure. You know, I'm living and working in a system that's holding me back from crafting my day. How would you advise that person, just really briefly?
The serious answer is that you've got three choices, which is change, leave, or accept. So you can change the situation you're in, which is hard because you're changing things at the limit of your influence. Except there's actually a lot of power in replacing some of the energy we're wasting on fighting by accepting the situation or the day that we're in and going with it. And of course, there's always the option of leaving, which some people feel that they're unable to do, but it's worth exploring. I'm working with cohorts of clergy using day crafting, but I'm also working with a group to define what slow ministry is and might be. And one of the first things that I've ensured we consider is what change needs to happen within the institution, within the culture. And we're beginning to explore that.
Thank you. It's really useful, Bruce, you know, because actually we've got choice. I think that's what people often don't see. And I have another question I want to ask. So day crafting does sound, it's very, I'm just parodying it, so, you know, please forgive. But it's very me, me, me. It's all about me, my desire, my gifts, what I want to do. How does it relate to community life, living within a community?
The difference between, and this is going to make some people cross, the difference between an artist and a craftsman is that if you're motivated by art, it is very intrinsically motivated. It is about you. You could be an artist. I must make this music or this painting or write this poetry, irrespective of whether it ever has an audience. If you're a craft person, it is all about the other. certainly your attention is on what is under your control, which is your own practice. But craft is always in dialogue with the other, whether that's the person who's commissioned the cathedral, the person that's commissioned, you know, whatever work a craftsperson might make. But it's a similar argument to positive psychology. I used to, 15 years ago, wrote and taught a course called Happiness for Life. If you're happy, if you have energy, if you know how to use time, if you're not continually questioning your identity, but you have a degree of certainty of who you are and what your boundaries are, you are then able to give the other your full attention. You can do that even if you have some of those problems, but the best we can be is when we're not preoccupied by our own issues and problems.
Bruce, we only have a few minutes left. I've got one final question, and it's a bit of a biggie, but I think it's really key. If you had a fantasy where a large group of people were doing this kind of work, this day crafting, what kind of society would emerge for us? Can you paint us a picture? Because my real question is day crafting a way to help heal the world?
Okay, the world, that's a big one. I think that the measure we should really focus on is the culture around us. So the team culture, that actually doesn't expand quite as far, but playing with the idea that it could be much larger, there are things like HDI, which is the Human Development Index. So a country GDP measures its GDP, and so much spills out of that. So much of business's definition of productivity spills out of our statewide measure of productivity, the GDP. But there are other models. There's the Human Development Index. There's Gross National Happiness, BLI, which is Better Life Index. So what would the DCI, Day Crafting Index, look like? I think it would champion meaningful progress. So it would champion people making incremental, meaningful progress in the day rather than championing the people that win competitions once in a blue moon. What else? We would work with our chronotypes. So instead of there being, it's a bit like left and right-handed. If, you know, we live in a right-hander's world, there are probably four very distinct chronotypes, each with a different pattern, whereas our day, our clock, our entertainment, all the rest of it is steered towards the predominant chronotype. Slow productivity, effective rest. We have an industry where ever increasingly people are controlling your attention through screens. That is not great. That doesn't lead to an increase in happiness. It actually leads to a decrease. But there's so much industry behind that that it's difficult for us as a society to push away from it. So redefining rest from being something that we do passively on the sofa with maybe one or even two screens in front of us to being something else, something much more active. Integrated work. So instead of work fitting into the 9-to-5, maybe work could be integrated. If you work from home, you can possibly do this already, which is integrating work across your whole day, because you're most creative for that middle chronotype. Your most creative time of the day is in the evening, not at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when somebody might have put in a meeting where we decide on the future vision of this particular project. It's not the good time of day to do it.
So Bruce, tell me, you go to bed at night, you've done perfect day crafting, you lay your head on the pillow, you look back over your day. What three adjectives would you use to describe how you feel about a beautifully day crafted day?
Really boring ones like contented, calm, peaceful.
Well, they're not boring. Contented, calm, and peaceful. If we all put our heads on a pillow every night and felt that, that would be a huge step forward into living a more healed life, I think. Bruce, thank you so much. We are going to be picking up all the threads of this conversation over in the Go Health community. So what are your thoughts about what Bruce said this morning as we chatted, what he said about the use of time and crafting our day? And at the moment, we're running an offer to join the Go Health community for free and experience all the resourcing of the burnout season. It's called Burn Like Stars, entirely without costs. It's our gift to you, and really everyone is welcome. It's free up until the end of November. Thank you to Rosie Dawson, our producer, and to Wendy Lloyd from the Go Health team for all her work on this series and this podcast. And thank you to you for listening. We hope you will check out the next episode, where I'll be talking to John Malazic, who is an internationally recognized journalist and scholar whose latest book is called The End of Burnout. It's going to be released right at the end of November, maybe even early December. And so he's going to help us take all the wisdom of Burn Like Stars into that most busy of seasons, Advent and Christmas. So don't miss it. Bruce, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. And hope everybody has a good day.
Brilliant.